people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my rock?
Now the N is for knots, or no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish it didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Bukitas, who plays a sour note. W is tie is this, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Centre, www.imemc.org, for Tuesday, December 20th, 2011. Three Palestinians are arrested in Jenin refugee camp, and another mosque is vandalised. These stories and more coming up, so stay tuned. In a dawn raid this Tuesday, Israeli military vehicles drove into Jenin refugee camp in the north of the West Bank and arrested three Palestinians. The three are Kamal Awad, age 24, Mazin Al-Saidi, 22, and Youssef Abu Siba, 31, and they have been taken to an undisclosed location. Soldiers also moved into the nearby town of Kabatia and installed a roadblock, and also installed a roadblock on the Jenin Jaffa Road, stopping and searching vehicles. In the fourth attack of its kind in 2 weeks, a mosque was vandalised in the southern West Bank city of Hebron. Unlike the others, this mosque was not subjected to an arson attack, but the settlers spray-painted insulting slogans still, including price tag. Settlers attacked Palestinians, property and holy sites in retaliation for any attempt by the Israeli government to remove or dismantle illegal settlements in the West Bank. In a separate settler incident, five Palestinian cars were torched in the village of Betin near the central West Bank city of Ramallah. A group of several armed settlers were seen to enter the village, whereby they set the cars on fire before leaving again. This last year, and particularly over the last few months, has seen a sharp rise in settler attacks. In other news, in a neighbourhood in Silwan, East Jerusalem, Israeli bulldozers arrived and destroyed industrial stalls. The site of demolition is believed to belong to the Ibrahimi College, and Israel is trying to remove the Palestinian structures from the area in order to build a national security college. The project that the Jerusalem municipality is trying to build is on Palestinian-owned lands, including land that belongs to the Ibrahimi College. The president of Southern Sudan arrived in Israel last night, Monday, for a short 24-hour visit. The tour includes meeting senior officials and the Israeli president Shimon Peres. The South Sudanese president will also be meeting with the Israeli prime minister and defense minister. The visit remained under the radar, despite the fact that media outlets previously reported the president intends to visit Israel, but no exact date was set, and Netanyahu will also be visiting South Sudan in the new year. Israel officially recognised the new state of Southern Sudan earlier in July this year, and even offered economic aid. That's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Tuesday, December 20th, daily roundup of news from the occupied Palestinian territories. We hope that you will join us again tomorrow. This was brought to you by Hussam Qassis and me, William Gibson.
Iraq, Sunday, 7 a.m. Baghdad time. The last U.S. combat troops rolled over the border into Kuwait in the final official convoy. An estimated 17,000 mercenaries, no doubt some from Blackwater, remain in the country, supposedly to protect the U.S. embassy. Fighting in Iraq continues, but at a reduced level with the end of the occupation. Kirkuk, Iraq, today. Four Katyusha rockets were fired against Freedom Base, which comprises the U.S. consulate in Kirkuk, security forces told Oswald Al Iraq News Agency. Baghdad, Iraq, today. One Iraqi government soldier was killed and two were wounded by an attack under a checkpoint north of Baghdad. Ahmadiyya, Iraq, today. Two Integrity Authority officials were injured in sticky or magnetically attached bomb blast. This kind of bomb is usually stuck under someone's car. Iraq, today. The Shiite-dominated government led by Prime Minister Maliki has issued an arrest warrant for the Sunni vice president, accusing him of terrorism. This comes just days after Sunni members of parliament walked out to protest the sectarian nature of the current Iraqi government, the one that owes its throne to the 2003 invasion and subsequent occupation by U.S. troops. Mr. Barack Obama, I hope you have plenty of helicopters ready to fly from the roof of the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. It will take a lot of flight time to evacuate the whole embassy, 17,000 mercenaries, and all those traitors and snitches you recruited to work with the occupation.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, wsqtradio@hushmail.com.
On the 17th of December, protesters showed up outside Fort Meade, Maryland, where Bradley Manning is being held during his court appearances.
Obama, you will see Bradley Manning will be free.
The previous day, the 16th of December, was Bradley Manning's first appearance before a military court after 18 months of pretrial confinement for allegedly releasing information to WikiLeaks, such as the infamous collateral murder video showing an American helicopter gunship in Iraq in 2007 gunning down a journalist and then shooting up the ambulance that came to attempt to rescue him and retrieve bodies.
Light them all up.
Come on, fire!
Hey, Roger. Keep shoot. Keep shoot.
Bushmaster 2-6. We need to move time now.
All right, we just engaged all eight individuals.
Now we have two bursts. We're still firing.
Roger.
Got him.
2-6, this is 2-6. We'll move, but we got
13. Oh, fuck, sorry. Right. Well,
you
want to
bypass?
God damn it, Kyle.
Sorry. I hit him.
So we're going to stay right here. We're going to stay right here.
We got 50 different cities around the world today celebrating Bradley Manning's birthday and outraged at his treatment of 18 months without a day in court.
That's right.
Yeah. 50 cities around the world India to Australia to the UK and of course in the United States. I just want to say, I thought David Coombs, his attorney, did a fantastic job yesterday challenging every possible legal argument in the first day. And yes, the investigating officer is probably a little annoyed, but we should all be annoyed at what's happened. For 18 months, for 10 of those months, Bradley was at Quantico, where he was ritualistically stripped nude some evenings, made to stand nude in front of other prisoners and guards in the mornings and the evenings. He was subjected to extreme isolation that no other prisoner at Quantico had ever been subjected to. Finally, it took 600,000 people writing petitions and writing and calling and getting ourselves arrested at the gates of Quantico and at the gates of the White House and singing a song to Barack Obama at a breakfast fundraiser before the administration finally relinquished and moved to Bradley to Leavenworth.
WikiLeaks, Bradley Manning, and the Arab uprising and Occupy Wall Street, they're all intimately connected. Because this is where they buy the politicians. Because this is where power has its seat. Because 99% of us are suffering.
I've been in the court 2 days, yesterday and today, and we've seen Bradley in person. He's a slim guy. He's a thin guy. But he's a guy that has stood up under intense, intense military pressure, trying to break him down. The retaliation, the retribution that the military is doing toward him, even though he hasn't been convicted of a thing.
I served as a 35 Mike and human intelligence collector in the United States Army for 3 years. And let me tell you something. Bradley Manning is a political prisoner. Bradley Manning did what a soldier's mandate is, and that when he sees illegal activities being done, he reports it to the proper authorities. And when the proper authorities are the ones who are not doing their jobs either, he took the next step that any soldier should have done and told the people. And now, and I also like to limit also about Mohamed Bouazizi, who today as well lit himself on fire to protest against his government and the oppression there. So just like Bouazizi, who started a revolution in the Arab world, Manning has started a revolution in the United States. The status quo is no longer acceptable because of what Manning has shown. Manning has shown that this government, along with corporations and other private interests, are abusing people in other countries, and Manning did the right thing. So if Manning did release these materials, then like Ann said, he has earned my respect as a soldier as well. And there's a pretty cliche saying we have in the Army, part of the warrior ethos, never leave a fallen comrade behind. So Manning, we are here, there are veterans in this crowd, and we are not going to leave you behind.
My name is Lieutenant Dan Choi, and I am reporting for duty. I come from the gay community, the only community in the entire world that bases its membership, its admission fee, on one thing: integrity. In the face of courage and faith, in the face of consequences, you show courage. They told us under Don't Ask, Don't Tell that certain information about us should be classified and hidden from the other people, because they said that good order and discipline will be compromised. The truth of ourselves, our identity, what's in our soul, our reputation as human beings, can never be hidden because it pollutes our soul and it hurts the mission and it hurts everybody around us. Today we deal with a society that has revealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military. And I don't want to live in a society that replaces that Don't Ask, Don't Tell with a new Don't Ask, Don't Tell in society and in our national security. It's time that we unclassify the truth that the people deserve to know. For that is what we swear to uphold. Those Army values. And when we see that with a situation where our comrade is in shackles and chains, he is on trial. But I remind you, among all of us gathered here today, because Bradley Manning stood up for the truth, he is the most free among all of us. He is not the one on trial. The United States of America is on trial today. Our reputation and what our country stands for.
And thrown into Baghdad prisons, which he knew were places of incredible torture. Okay. Now, what were his instructions? Well, He didn't have any instructions. Nobody had any instructions. What did his conscience say? His conscience says, this got stopped. So he went to his superiors. This is what I saw. What should I do? Keep your mouth shut. Keep your mouth shut. Do your tour and go home. Well, a man with a conscience has problems with those kinds of orders, right? Do we all have consciences? We do. Are we all going to go back to our our barracks and say, well, all right, you know, nobody else is saying anything? Well, most people do that, but Bradley Manning did not, okay? What did he do? Well, he found out some sort of other way to expose this. Now, would he go to the ABC or CBS or CNN reporter on the scene? Give me a break! Those people have been on leave for 2 decades, okay?
Yeah!
Of the state anymore, with all due respect to any here. And what Bradley Manning knew instinctively was there's a fifth estate! And where is it? Careful of that predator up there.
Let's shoot it down.
It's up here in the ether, okay? Can it be controlled? Well, they're trying, but I don't think they're going to be able to control it. And what Bradley saw was this is a way to get the message out.
In 1984, the U.S. government put me in federal prison for a year as a result of demonstrating against nuclear weapons at the Savannah River bomb plant. During that period of time, they put me in solitary confinement in Atlanta Federal Penitentiary for a month. Now, it was only a month, but at no period of time in my life have I suffered as much as during that month in solitary confinement. I still have nightmares about that. Now I have nightmares about the treatment of Bradley Manning mixed in with the nightmares I have about the time they put me in solitary confinement. I think Bradley Manning is a much stronger man than I am because I see him standing up. He has not flipped as the government, I'm sure, wants him to do and testified against Julian Assange to try to get out of this. He's standing up bravely like a man, and I have the utmost respect for him for doing that. We should give him...
So we're going to stay right here. We're going to stay right here.
On the 18th of December, Occupy DC marched on the White House demanding that President Obama keep his former promise to veto the NDAA, the Pentagon budget that contains provisions allowing for indefinite military detention of people accused of terrorism, even on U.S. soil, even if they're U.S. citizens.
It's the national call to action against military detention.
The worst of both worlds.
Out of the camp and into the streets!
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 Our streets!
Whose streets?
Our streets!
Whose streets?
Our streets!
Whose streets?
NAA!
We say no way!
NDAA!
We say no way!
NDAA!
We say no way!
Which allows the military
to indefinitely detain
American citizens
without due process
without trial
without even giving them
a damn phone call.
This is not
what we meant
by hope!
And change!
This is not!
What we meant!
When we said!
Bring the troops home!
Now Obama!
Seems to think!
No matter what he does!
We will vote for him!
Is he right?
No!
If Obama wants my vote,
and the votes of his entire base,
who believed in him,
who are at their wits' end,
who knew
that we needed change,
or we're going over a cliff.
He has no choice,
but to veto this bill.
Veto this bill!
voices heard.
And get our voices heard.
Can do so.
Can do so.
By staying on the sidewalk.
By staying on the sidewalk.
We did not come here.
We did not come here.
March a little bit.
To march a little bit.
And then go home.
Then go home.
Obama needs to know.
Obama needs to know.
And everybody needs to know.
And everybody needs to know.
We will be acting more.
We will be acting more.
This week.
This week.
We expect this veto.
We expect this veto.
But we know.
But we know.
You don't just get it by asking.
You don't just get it by asking.
You get it by demanding.
You get it by demanding.
And we are here.
And we're here.
Several protesters were arrested, one of them for chaining himself to the White House fence. If the NDAA with the indefinite detention provisions is signed into law, there would be nothing to prevent a future U.S. president from having protesters signed into military custody and detained indefinitely for life for the very same thing, for chaining himself to the White House fence to protest a war or war on terror policy. Update, update, update. On a late night action, Monday the 19th of December, another 11 people were arrested in front of the White House protesting the NDAA, the Pentagon budget bill that includes the indefinite military detention provision. This song goes out to all you goons at Homeland Security, the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and police organizations that are trying to attack Occupy camps all across the U.S. Rich takes it for his children and rags welfare reform. Let them eat cake. Why should we care? Bye, 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 bye. See the greed of the shopping malls as they pick your pockets clean. Fat in the bottom line. Fat in your belly too. See the greed of the shopping malls as they pick your pockets clean. Fat in the bottom line. Fat in your belly too. Bye, 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 bye. Rich takes them for his children and rags welfare reform. Let them be kicked. Why should we care? Bye, 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 bye. See the greed of the shopping malls just to pick your pockets clean. Fat in the bottom line. Fat in your belly too. Three out of four of Occupy DC votes, hunger strikers have now been forced to throw in the towel. The hunger strike for DC voting rights and budget autonomy has now been going on for over 2 weeks. One of the hunger strikers, Adrian Parsons, has vowed to continue.
Well, I can't beat on the power list when my cup's already.
A Twitter post from Respect DC said that no lawmaker, right, left, House, Senate, should be able to take a bite of Christmas dinner without thinking of Adrian Parsons. Let's hope Twitter doesn't suspend Respect DC or Adrian Parsons over this. Despite having been in a wheelchair due to the effects of the hunger strike, Adrian was arrested last week in a civil disobedience in front of the Longworth House office building in response to the GOP social rider in the 2012 budget that prohibits DC from using its own money to fund abortion services for poor women. Let's hear it for Adrian Parsons!
Yeah.
15th of December, Occupy DC and Catholics United delivered a golden bull, symbolizing both a Wall Street bull and the biblical golden calf symbolizing idol worship to Capitol Hill, with the intention of delivering the bull to House Speaker Boehner. The Capitol Police refused to allow the golden bull to enter the Longworth building or any of the other Capitol Hill buildings.
Today!
Why are we here today?
Because the worship of money.
Because the worship of money.
And profit.
And profit.
Is a spiritual sickness.
Is a spiritual sickness.
Unable to deliver the golden bull to House Speaker Boehner, Occupy DC and Catholics United parked the bull next to a church on Capitol Hill and continued to Boehner's office without it.
We bow our heads to give you thanks. I'd like today to particularly call out Speaker of the House, John Boehner, fellow Catholic, person of faith. We ask that you touch Speaker Boehner's heart as he leads this Congress in unprecedented cuts to the poor and vulnerable, that you touch his heart and remind him that as a person of God, he should be willing to ask those with the most ability to share the sacrifice being asked by all the American people. For us, that means making the Wall Street industry, the financial industry, who live in such luxury, to share some of that privilege with their fellow Americans.
I just can't think of a better symbol of Wall Street's greed and worship of money than a golden calf, or in this case, a golden bull, like the one that Occupy DC and Catholics United tried to deliver to Boehner's office. Twitter has just gotten caught suspending or deleting accounts of users who talk too much about Occupy Wall Street. One user, David Seaman at the Business Insider, reported that his account was suspended for annoying our users after just two tweets about Occupy Wall Street that must have been followed by the wrong people. This is in spite of the fact that those who do not like Occupy Wall Street could have simply unfollowed him. Doing a little digging, he found three more users who had been removed from Twitter for the same so-called offense. Hey Twitter! This is some change from standing down a service upgrade that would have disrupted service during the revolt in Iran. What does Occupy Wall Street need to do to avoid random account suspensions? Move to Iran? Seriously, folks, this is why I've been telling you for years to never trust corporate social media like Facebook and obviously Twitter as well. Any cloud service owned by a corporation and supporting itself by advertisements has a vested interest in censoring and snitching on any kind of activism that threatens corporate profits. Still wonder why we need things like pirate radio and independent media centers that don't support themselves by advertising?
As 2011 comes to a close, the year has seen the United States set a record for billion-dollar extreme weather disasters. Major storms, deaths, and record property damage occurred across the country, from a heat wave in Texas to a massive tropical storm that hit the Northeast, leaving millions of people without power. According to the Associated Press, the damage caused by severe storms this year has surpassed all the damage from extreme weather during the entire decade of the 1980s. Scientists attribute the extent of storm damage in 2011 to the growing impact of climate change and some bad luck. All told, 2011 witnessed over $52 billion worth of damages. In a recent speech, NOAA Administrator Jane Lubchenco called this year's extreme weather a harbinger of things to come, with more record heat waves, droughts, and big storms.
Since Republican candidates scored major victories for state offices across the U.S. last November, state governments controlled by the GOP have passed numerous measures restricting the right of targeted constituencies to cast ballots. A recent report by the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund titled Defending Democracy: Confronting Modern Barriers to Voting Rights in America documents what the group asserts is a coordinated assault on minorities' voting rights, who often heavily favor Democratic candidates. The report found that in more than a dozen states, measures have been signed into law during 2011 that impose new restrictions on the types of voter IDs required to cast a ballot, limiting the number of days for early voting, marginalizing student voters, creating unnecessary obstacles for groups registering new voters, as well as disenfranchising the disabled and ex-felons. The study concluded that if these restrictions were not reversed, more than 5 million Americans may be denied the right to vote, a fact that could dramatically change the outcome of state and federal election results, as well as the race for the White House. A coalition of more than 100 groups led by the NAACP came together in New York City for a protest at the United Nations on December 10th to launch a national campaign to challenge restrictions on voting rights. The march, that organizers say drew 20 to 25,000 participants, began at the headquarters of the billionaire Koch brothers, who provided $1 million in funding to the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, that designed many of the legislative templates to restrict voting rights. Your reporter spoke with April Tyler, an organizer with the December 10th Mobilization Committee, who talks about the ways in which the National Standing for Freedom campaign will work to reverse Republican Party measures to suppress voting rights.
Well, the bottom line message is, one, that we have got to be ever vigilant. And we remember, many of us who are African American and immigrants, activists from the 1950s, 1960s, we remember the Jim Crow laws, and we remember when, or, you know, I don't remember because I'm too young, but my parents and grandparents remember when there were poll taxes, there were literacy tests, when people really did not have the right to vote. And, you know, I've studied my civil rights history, so I know that there were lots of people who fought and who died for me to have the right to vote. And so the bottom line message was that we fought for this right. Many of us died for this right. Many of our brothers and sisters and even our family members died for us to have the right to vote. So we cannot sit still and let the rights be eroded. We also stood before the United Nations on UN Human Rights Day because we feel that this is not just a civil right, it's not just a constitutional right, it's a human right to be able to participate in the governance of your country. And we aim to not only beat back these efforts, but to broaden the voting rights for more people in this country.
April, tell us what's going on in states around the country that are controlled by Republican governors and legislatures regarding restrictions imposed on the right to vote, for example, imposing strict voter ID regulations, limiting early voting, marginalizing student voters, and throwing up obstacles on registering new voters. It's a long list of things in a long list of states, but if you could summarize some of the things that concern you most.
Okay, in almost 40 states across the country, there either has been laws passed in recent years, the last couple of years, or laws introduced to require specific voter identification, photo voter identification. And we see this as a problem because in order to obtain those specific types of identification, you have to either have particular documents or to prove your identity, or you've got to purchase those documents. So we see this as a backdoor poll tax. Additionally, we see a problem with the efforts to restrict student voting, requiring specific forms of student identification. And specifically in Texas, if you have a gun license issued by the National Rifle Association, you can vote. But if you got a student identification card issued from the University of Texas, you may not be able to vote. Additionally, in specific states, particularly across the South, where on Sundays, the last Sunday before Election Day, they would organize what they call souls to the polls. And after service, people would go together and vote. And they've now eliminated that in at least two states and have it pending in a few other states. So those, as well as a few other issues, we see as very problematic. And we see it as targeted toward students, elderly, disabled, minorities, immigrants, who would be, we're the 99%. We're not going to vote for eliminating the millionaire's tax. And we're going to vote for more progressive issues. And the effort, which is funded in large part by, the Koch brothers and conservative organizations, is targeted at restricting our access.
How is your coalition addressing a remedy here? I guess there's a couple of avenues you could take, going through the courts, the U.S. Justice Department pursuing violations of the United States Civil Rights Act. You could also take the direct action route, realizing that voting rights are an essential element to democracy. And we certainly have many examples in U.S. history where direct action was taken to preserve the right to vote. Where are you targeting your efforts right now?
All of the above. There are legal efforts in each state where these laws have passed or are being proposed. There's actually conversations with the U.S. Justice Department about pushing back and being ever vigilant when the districts that have to be pre-approved by the Justice Department come before them. And we are also doing direct action across the nation. December 10th was just the kickoff. With the NAACP and the coalition that was formed and that is still growing, we plan to, keep this on the front burner throughout, the next couple of years at least.
That was April Tyler, an organizer with a December 10th mobilization committee. Find links to more information on the campaign to overturn restrictions on voting rights at our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org. As the 17th Conference of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change in Durban, South Africa, concluded on December 11th, many environmental activists were disappointed with the results, but relieved that the talks hadn't collapsed. With the 1997 Kyoto Protocol Treaty on Global Warming set to expire, the conference in Durban was tasked with negotiating an agreed-upon path toward developing a new international treaty that will control greenhouse gas emissions. Negotiators from the European Union in Durban argued for a legally binding treaty that would cover the entire world, including developing nations that had been exempt under Kyoto. The 11th-hour agreement hammered out in Durban pledged to work toward a new global treaty by 2015, but due to objections from India and China, the legal force of such an agreement remains ambiguous. Negotiators in Durban also established a $100 billion green climate fund to assist poor nations in adapting to climate change and reduce their CO2 emissions. But the source of the money for the fund has not yet been settled. But while there was progress in some areas, leading scientists are alarmed that the conference in Durban failed to agree on any plan to dramatically cut emissions necessary to avoid the future destructive effects of global warming. Your reporter spoke with Daphne Wisham, co-director of the Institute for Policy Studies' Sustainable Energy and Economy Network. She summarizes the outcome of the UN Durban conference and the role the Obama administration played in the climate talks.
The Kyoto Protocol was destined to expire next year in 2012. What was agreed in Durban was that parties to the Kyoto Protocol would decide over the next year on whether or not to extend a second commitment period under the Kyoto Protocol. So that would essentially take us from 2013 till 2017. And it was agreed that they would take the next year on making that decision. So essentially what happened is that carbon markets got put on life support for another year, and perhaps at the end of next year they will continue until 2017. Next year, the conference of the parties will meet in the very undemocratic country of Qatar, and there are no commitments to emissions reductions from rich countries in the interim. Basically, what this means is that the Kyoto Protocol is on life support for the next year, and it's being potentially replaced by a new agreement that is even weaker unless we take action and make sure that that doesn't happen. The other thing that people are saying is a breakthrough is that all the parties agreed to legally binding emissions by 2020. We'll have to see how that plays out. Of course, China and India. China is now the number one greenhouse gas emitter. Their emissions have been rising quite dramatically over the last decade. And India's emissions are also beginning to head up in the uptick. But, you know, we have to keep in mind that these countries, these two countries, have over 2 billion people combined and represent a significant share of the world's population, and they're just now beginning to come online. That doesn't mean they can't begin to develop in a way that avoids making the same mistakes that we have, but they still are experiencing quite significant levels of poverty. And, of course, we're exporting a lot of our coal from places like Wyoming, from the Powder River Basin, to China. So we're helping China and India burn lots and lots of coal, and we're culpable in their greenhouse gas emissions.
So if you were to assess the successes and failures of this Durban conference, what would you say would be the highlights and lowlights there?
The highlights are that we saw people power in force, you know, that we saw youth in particular speaking out boldly at the climate negotiations, risking arrest, standing up for their future. It is, after all, the young people that are going to be paying the highest price around the world. We saw, you know, the beginnings of discussions that absolutely do need to take place between all of the countries globally, and, you know, as some of the small island states rightfully say to India and China, you want the right to develop, we want the right just to survive, and clearly survival trumps development. So we're beginning to have the discussion that's a fairly difficult one involving some of the larger emitting developing countries as well as the poorer ones, and that's at least a step in the right direction. The problem is that the U.S., once again, is not only not joining the Kyoto Protocol in any meaningful way, they've refused to put any money on the table. They refused to agree to any binding emissions cuts. They've even refused to support something called the financial transactions tax, which could potentially raise $600 billion a year while also curbing financial speculation, which is something that all of us are beginning to learn a lot more about in the aftermath of this meltdown we're living through, of, in part as a result of financial speculation. And on the one hand, the Obama administration has, to some degree, had its hands tied at the national level by the Senate, by the fact that we have a Senate that will not even consider climate legislation, and some senators who think that climate change doesn't even exist. So, you know, the Obama administration gets some sympathy on that level, but it gets no sympathy for actively trying to obstruct some of the talks that were going on at the international level. We kept hearing that Obama's negotiators were playing a negative role in obstructing progress at the international level, and that is absolutely shameful. Regardless of all of this climate science denial that's coming out of the U.S. and perhaps some other countries as well, the world passed the $1 trillion mark in clean energy investment since 2004. I think the future will be clean. It's just a question of how much damage we'll do in the interim. And hopefully, you know, people can take heart and know that people power really is making a difference in this country, and we've just got to keep it up.
That was Daphne Wisham, co-director of the Institute for Policy Studies Sustainable Energy and Economy Network. Find more analysis and commentary on the issue of climate change on our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.